This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 7th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 425. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the FIFA World Cup 26 draw. Now we know who is coming to BC Place Stadium next June. Will it be worth the price tag that is on the way to $1 billion? My guest is Mario Canseco of Research Co.
This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Washington, D.C. was the capital of world soccer on December 5th for the FIFA World Cup 26 official draw. A variety show and lottery at the Kennedy Center, where most of the first-round matchups in the 48-nation tournament were announced, including matchups for the hosts Canada, Mexico, and the United States. It was also the first time that U.S. President Donald Trump, Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum, and Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney appeared together. Kraft in Vancouver's Olympic Village was the scene of the official local watch party, where British Columbia Premier David Eby warmed up the crowd.
I am sure that this draw is going to go our way. I'm so excited about what's going to happen today. I know you're excited too. I'm going to be a little bit selfish about the World Cup. Having these games in British Columbia, having Vancouver participate in the World Cup is important for our economy. It helps the hospitality industry. All those hardworking servers and cooks and people who own restaurants, people in the tourism industry, having the whole world see our amazing province and want to come visit, having CEOs from around the world fly to see their favorite team.
Prime Minister Mark Carney.
We are partnered with the United States and Mexico, welcoming the world. There's more than 200 nationalities in Canada, more than 200 nationalities in FIFA. The top 48 are coming to North America. It is going to be the biggest deal ever.
In Group B, we have Canada, the winner of Playoff A, Qatar, and Switzerland.
After the FIFA World Cup draw, 42 of the 48 nations that will be playing in Canada, Mexico, and the United States in June and July of 2026 are now known. Over my shoulder is BC Place Stadium, home for Canada for two matches. Canada will be playing Qatar and Switzerland here in Vancouver. It'll be playing a team to be determined in a playoff or early 2026 in Toronto. That'll be the first World Cup match here in Canada. Mario Canseco, you were there to watch the World Cup draw at the official Vancouver location at the Kraft Brewery at Olympic Village. What are your first thoughts on this show, the extravaganza that came to us live from Washington, D.C., hosted by Donald Trump, as well as FIFA President Gianni Infantino?
It was a little bit excessive, to put it mildly. A lot of fanfare, a lot of discussions. The awarding of the Montgomery Burns achievement Montgomery Burns Award for Achievement in the Fields of Excellence, as it was called in The Simpsons. Very long process, lack of really important soccer legends. Some of them were interviewed while they were sitting down waiting for the results to come in. So it was kind of a letdown. And very complicated as well, because of the way in which the game is trying to be sold to the public in the United States. You know, lots of emphasis on the other leagues that are popular, but not so much in soccer.
And speaking of sales job, there still needs to be a bit of a sales job here domestically in Vancouver to get the public excited about this. There are a lot of reasons for the public to have some skepticism and doubt, and there's even some that have some opposition just because the sheer cost of hosting this tournament, seven matches at BC Place Stadium, the NDP government's latest top-end estimate earlier this year was $624 million. They're also finishing the amphitheater at P&E, which is approaching $200 million, it's tripled in price. We don't know the full price tag yet for security and safety, which would be a big concern. The world has changed a lot since the 2010 Winter Olympics, when it was actually $1 billion to protect Vancouver during that event. What do you think that the organizers here need to do to get Vancouverites on side? I'm certainly Vancouverites are excited about soccer already on side, but there's a large segment of the population that is struggling to pay bills, pay higher taxes. They see socioeconomic problems on our streets. Hospitals are full, and in some hospitals in the suburbs in rural BC, there are closures because there aren't enough doctors. And there is also a bit of a tourism problem here that there aren't enough hotel rooms. However, with matches against teams like Switzerland and Qatar, Qatar's population is not much bigger than Vancouver's metro-wise.
No, it's a bit of a letdown in my view. I think what I was expecting and what I was hoping for was teams with a large diaspora playing at BC Place. You know, maybe Iran, maybe South Korea, maybe Japan, maybe Colombia. And we didn't get any of that. We get Qatar, which doesn't have a significant presence in BC and doesn't have a significant presence in world soccer, which is a bit of a blessing and a curse because you know that those who are going to be coming here to see Qatar are going to spend big money. I think it's good news in the sense of what it means to tourism when you have probably a smaller proportion of visitors, but visitors who are willing to spend big. And similar situation with Switzerland. You could have gotten a second-tier European team that is a little bit more popular. There's a chance that one of them is Italy, but that game is going to be happening at BMO Field, which is the smallest stadium. It's the smallest stadium of all the stadiums that will be used. So, you know, we were hoping for something that would recreate the magic that we had in the Mexico-Canada match prior to the last World Cup, but we're not going to get any of that.
Yeah, there are still plenty of questions about Qatar and its governance and its human rights record. There were many worker fatalities on the way to 2022 when it hosted the World Cup in building all the stadiums it needed to build. And, of course, human rights for women, for people who are LGBTQ, for instance. Qatar is not like Canada. It's like night and day, and there's questions about Qatar. There's questions about a lot of countries that are entered and will be coming to North America in 2026. Do you think that could cause problems on the streets of Vancouver, that there could be protests? I mean, we also know about Qatar and its connection to funding Hamas, for instance, and the very complicated matter that has happened over the last couple of years, tragic matter in the Israel-Hamas war.
I think there's definitely potential for some sort of protest. Partly because we're in a different situation than we had back in 2010. At the time, I was able to track the sentiments of people in Metro Vancouver and the city of Vancouver directly, and there was a lot of skepticism about how the games were going to unfold, how it was affecting the daily lives of people because this was happening in the middle of February. It's different when it's during the summer, but there's still going to be some disruptions that the residents of the city might not be happy with, and that is going to be part of what defines the legacy of the city as a host of the World Cup, not just whether you were able to keep the security and to do the things that you needed to do to ensure that everybody who came here had a good time, but how disruptive were you with the people who are already here and who are already struggling with so many things.
I guess there might be a silver lining with nations like Qatar and Switzerland coming to BC Place Stadium, is that these are countries which do not have very large international diaspora. A limited number of people from both countries will be traveling, which means that there could be more tickets added to the pool for Vancouverites, for Canadians to purchase.
Well, I think that's also part of the silver lining that we have here. You know, you're not going to be fighting the federations that already have some access to those tickets because we're not talking about significantly large proportions of residents who are going to be coming here. It also might help lower down the cost of some of the tickets, which has been absolutely insane, particularly in the secondary market. I think there's still a chance that there's a sellout. I mean, Canada is playing, and I think that is going to be exciting for people. But it's not going to be as wild as it was when we had the Mexico-Canada, if we had a Canada-Iran or a Canada-South Korea, for instance.
And we are doing this interview on December 5th after the draw, that our viewers will probably know more when they see this, as we'll know more about the actual matchups, who actually is coming here for the other matches, because FIFA is having another extravaganza on the Saturday morning on December the 6th. We'll find out the entire locked-in schedule for all the matches. There could be some surprises there. There could be more opportunities for other bigger nations, the whales, and there could be some surprises with some of the minnows. And, of course, BC Place is hosting matches in the knockout rounds, which does make it interesting. There is one more match in Vancouver than there is in Seattle and Toronto. We found, though, that the NDP government they negotiated to get the extra match, but they didn't negotiate to get any preferential ticket treatment. And I found that through some email correspondence between an assistant deputy minister and the chief tournament official for FIFA in Canada, that it took until June 2025 for someone in the government to ask FIFA, oh, by the way, any chance that locals can get front of the line. So there's been a lot of questions about how this has been handled, and there isn't much time left.
Well, this is part of the design as well. You know, they got to figure out a way to make sure that Canada plays for a larger period at BC. And that entails Canada finishing in first place in this group. If it doesn't finish in first place in this group, then it's a little bit more complicated. But we have to figure out also the timeline of some of the matches. If you have a match between two teams at the same time, so it doesn't make sense to have it early in the morning or later in the afternoon, depending on how the situation goes. So that is what we're waiting for tomorrow, and to see if some of these venues actually change depending on who's going to be playing.
Now, you've got experience as a reporter covering World Cups, 1994, 1998. You were a broadcaster in Mexico. Of course, World Cups have changed. This is going to be the biggest World Cup ever. The game has changed in so many ways since then, but a lot of things do stay the same. What should people in Vancouver know about what's going to be coming to the city?
The most important thing is lots of people who are very happy to be here, who are not going to be necessarily looking for a bad time. I think that's the biggest difference that we've seen over the past few World Cups. It's a different kind of tourism. It's a different kind of person who wants to come in here and to see the places and to spend money and to have a good time. There's also the fact that this is a significantly more global game than it used to be. You have teams now that are worldwide. You have players who are significantly better known than they were in the 1990s. And I think that also benefits those who are fans of the game, but also brings people who don't know enough about this to the fold. And I think we saw that a little bit with particularly ethnic communities that weren't really that in tune with winter sports and really came together in 2010 when we hosted the Winter Games. So something similar could happen here if it's the other way around. It's going to be Canadians who aren't really that used to soccer embracing a game that is very popular around the world.
Yeah, it is different. I've covered many Olympics, both summer and winter, other major events, Pan Am Games, Commonwealth Games. I've covered Women's World Cups. We haven't had a FIFA World Cup come to Vancouver yet. Last time it was in North America, it was 1994. But the FIFA events do have their VIPs and their corporate tickets. Unlike the Olympics, though, most seats are full.
Yes.
It's also an event that draws more of the average people. People will have to be digging deeper in their pockets this time than ever before. FIFA has a new ticketing system that many diehard soccer fans say is very confusing and costly. It's going to be harder for people to get those tickets and harder for some people to get into the countries in North America, but at least it is more accessible to the hardcore fans in some of these major soccer nations around the world, whereas Olympic ticketing has been very much controlled.
That is going to be part of the complexity here. How do you allocate some of these seats once you know who's playing, once you know who's going to be coming here? How many seats will each federation require when they come here? I think there's an opportunity for people who are disappointed and dejected at how poorly the ticketing has gone to find a way to actually get a ticket. But that's also part of what has changed dramatically. The sheer amount of sponsors and the enormous amount of money that you have to pay to go to a match. I look back at how much the tickets cost in Mexico in 1970 and 1986. And it's just unbelievable how expensive going to a soccer match in the World Cup has become.
It is a much more complicated way to get tickets for this World Cup. It's also a much more complicated world in so many ways. Geopolitics is going to figure into this World Cup. Of course, we saw during the draw that Donald Trump really tried to make it his draw. He's trying to make it his World Cup, his big party. It's happening in the United States, the 250th anniversary of independence. It's a big year for the U.S., a big year for him. We did finally see him at least extend a bit of an olive branch to both Mexico and to Canada. Prime Minister Carney was there and President Sheinbaum was there. Previously, he had dismissed Canada and Mexico. There's the trade war that's going on, and that's the major reason why, but he was on a little bit better, more diplomatic behavior today. But that geopolitics will affect security and safety. The geopolitics is probably going to manifest itself in questions about who's sponsoring this event.
Absolutely.
One of the biggest sponsors is Saudi Aramco, the Saudi Arabian oil company. Of course, Qatar Airways is the FIFA official airline. The milk sponsor, the milk supplier, is Mengniu Dairy from China. And they're going to be able to place their brands throughout Vancouver in certain protected areas. And they'll have the weight of civic bylaws behind them. So people will not be able to advertise for a competing product. We'll wonder if people will be able to express themselves, wear T-shirts that say either down with Saudi oil or keep it in the ground, depending on what end of the scale they are. We didn't see that so much in previous World Cups, the big sponsors, but now we have countries like Saudi Arabia becoming very, very ingrained in the game because they've basically bought their way into hosting a future World Cup.
Well, there's always that element, particularly if we look at North America. This was a very cordial day today. They were all in the same place and essentially participating with very happy, gleeful faces in the draw. But, you know, the renegotiation of the free trade agreement between the three countries is going to happen at the same time as the World Cup. So we'll see if those miles continue. We start to talk about the future of Kuzma. It's also a very delicate matter when it comes to the way FIFA behaves with those who are selling things that are not official sponsors. We've seen it with Soda Pop, we've seen it with beers. It might be difficult for those who are operating near the areas where the World Cup will be happening to be able to keep some of those contracts in place.
You mentioned Kuzma. Of course, Donald Trump calls it USMCA, and USMCA rhymes with his favorite song. We saw the FIFA draw end with the Village People.
I don't think anyone's told Trump that that song is actually a gay anthem from the 1970s. Somebody might.
Those you know, Studio 54 days, which he still may remember in the foggy parts of his mind. It really was an interesting and unusual show. It took so long to get to the draw stage, but here we are at the draw stage. We talked earlier about Canada and Group B, but looking at the draw, who is, they always talk about the group of death. Which group will be the one that people's eyes are riveted on, the one that has the biggest question mark beside it about who can emerge?
I think it's definitely France, Senegal, the playoff team that is going to be decided, and Norway. Haaland is a tremendous player. I think there's an opportunity for them to actually surpass France and to do something different. And Senegal was one of the most powerful nations in Africa during qualifying. But it's not as easy as it used to be. When we had 24 teams, when we had 16 teams, there was always one group that was going to be so hard. And this definitely worked out well. I'd say the easiest path towards the second round is definitely Argentina. They're playing Algeria and Austria and Jordan. Even though Wayne Gretzky called it Jordan. But it'll be interesting to see what happens afterwards. There are so many matches, and usually the World Cup, as we know it, begins in the round of 32, especially this time around. It's usually the second round when you start to figure out what's going to be happening. And once we have those teams in place, it'll be easier to see what the path would be. But we are going to have some interesting matchups for sure.
And FIFA, by expanding the tournament, has also expanded the opportunities for teams to enter the tournament. It has a couple of, it's got the European playoff, but it's also got a playoff, another wild card tournament. So four European teams will be decided and slotted in. And there's two other wild cards to be slotted in another tournament. New Caledonia, of all countries. New Caledonia, for people who've been watching geopolitics here in Vancouver very closely, there was an uprising last year in New Caledonia. There's a lot of politics there around mining and governance of the country. It's a French colony, and that's why you may have seen a lot of French military jets come through Vancouver International Airport last year, and even President Macron came through Vancouver on his way to visit people in New Caledonia to quell that uprising. But Cape Verde is another one. Group H, with Spain, Saudi Arabia, and Uruguay, Cape Verde is about the size of Surrey.
Yes.
From a population standpoint. That's going to be an interesting one. Of course, Curaçao, which is another country that Wayne Gretzky didn't score on the pronunciation playoffs.
That's a tough group for Curaçao. They got Germany, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ecuador. Not the way you want to make your World Cup debut.
I mean, you know, Group A, you got Mexico, and Group D, United States. Who do you think will go further? USA, Mexico, and add Canada to that mix?
I think the groups are definitely good for the host nations. Strongest team that Canada could play is going to emerge from the playoff, of course. It could be Italy, and if they get on a streak, you know that the Italians can go places. The Americans have a fairly simple group with Paraguay and Australia. Mexico's playing South Africa again. They did in South Africa. It's playing South Korea, which they played in 1998. It's a significantly easier group. Mexico, when it hosted the World Cup in 1970 and 1986, always played tough European teams. This is not the case this year.
And, of course, it'll be the anniversary of England 1966. Now, I'm waiting to see what's going to happen with Ireland and Northern Ireland to see if they can make it through. But England.
And possibly Wales, we don't know.
True. England was the first European side to qualify, and of course, they're under a lot of pressure to see if they can reach World Cup glory again. 1966 was the one and only time. Can they do it in 2026? Do you think that they have a chance?
It's a very different Croatia from the one that finished in third place in Qatar. Older generation, younger players. Ghana is not the powerhouse that it used to be, and Panama is still a fairly new player in the CONCACAF stage, so England should come out of that group fairly easily.
Okay. Any last thoughts about World Cup 2026, FIFA World Cup 2026, as we are here after the draw and counting down the days until Vancouver changes? You'll see a lot of changes around the city, roadblocks, security, roadblocks, transportation, banners, flags, all sorts. It's going to be a different place come the spring.
It'll take people back to the experience they had in 2010 with some differences. There's only one venue, but it's a massive venue. BC Place was used only twice during the 2010 games. This is going to be happening seven times with seven different sets of people who are going to be showing up and trying to do things. And it's going to be disruptive for those who are working downtown, that's for sure.
Thanks again for watching the Breaker.News podcast. Mario Canseco from Research Co. and veteran World Cup reporter from 1994 and 1998 in Mexico, and Bob Mackin. Thanks for watching, and keep on tuning in to the Breaker.News podcast and following us online, thebreaker.news.
For Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Focus Taiwan.tw, China may hold large-scale drill by year-end, says Taiwan intelligence head. National Security Bureau Director General Tsai Ming-yen said the People's Liberation Army has routinely held separate military exercises in November and December each year to test the combat readiness of China's troops. According to Tsai, there are currently four PLA naval fleets in the West Pacific. A dozen warships from eight countries have passed through the Taiwan Strait this year from United States, Japan, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, the United Kingdom, and France. In ABC News Australia, Australia's teen social media ban unofficially began. While the law officially kicks in on December 10th, Meta began removing Instagram, Threads, and Facebook accounts from December 4th. The ban is not exactly a ban. An amendment to the Online Safety Act in November 2024 will force some, but not all, social media companies to prevent or try to prevent under-16s from holding an account on their platforms, but not from using them. In Kyoto News, Japan government eyes bill to legalize use of birth surnames by married people. The Japanese government is considering submitting to Parliament next year a bill to legalize the use of birth surnames after marriage, rather than allowing married couples the option to retain separate surnames. The issue is among the most contentious in the nation, with the Justice Ministry saying it is unaware of any country other than Japan that requires couples, by law, to adopt the same surname upon marriage.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland approves impact fee targeting ICE detention center. What that means is less clear. The measure, passed in a 9-2 vote by the City Council, will create a new fee for private property owners who lease their buildings to be used as detention centers. Its aim, according to proponents, is to recoup costs incurred by the city government, residents, or businesses because of activities related to such facilities. In Cascadia Daily News, Canadian corporation buys 110-year-old Bellingham Wood Products business. Brooks Manufacturing, the family-owned wood crossarm company in Bellingham, has been acquired by the Canadian corporation Stella Jones for $140 million. The Quebec-based company bought Brooks in early November. Stella Jones, incorporated in 1992, manufactures industrial and residential pressure-treated wood products, including utility poles and railway ties across more than 40 plants in North America. Brooks isn't the company's first Washington State acquisition. Stella Jones also owns plants in Tacoma and Arlington. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. How many World Cup tickets, suites, and lounges did Vancouver City Hall buy? And with less than a year to go, BC government official pressed FIFA executive for local ticket access. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
small and local businesses across British Columbia. December 1st to 7th is the annual BC Buy Local Week. Consider buying local for Christmas. Keep the money in your community.
And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 7th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 7th of December in 1949, the government of the Republic of China moved to Taiwan? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.